There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Hello, and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for July the 10th, 2020. This is episode number 14. Today, we'll be talking about the Audi Q4 e-tron Sportback concept debuts, Tesla Cybertruck reservations open up in China, and a mystery Mustang Mach-E race car is spotted hooning. I'm Dominic Yoni, Inside EVs editor and Inside EVs forum moderator. Joining us today, we have Tom Malogny, multiple EV owner and Inside EVs editor. We also have Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, available on all your usual podcast platforms. And of course, we have Kyle Connor from the Out of Spec Motoring and One Lap YouTube channels. And he also puts together the super awesome videos for the new Inside EVs YouTube channel. Go subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. So welcome, gentlemen of the panel and ladies and gentlemen of the audience. Lots to talk about today, but before we get to the big news, what do we have charging up in our driveways? I believe, Tom, this week you have a BMW i-something. What do you have?
Yeah, I actually just returned it, a 2019 BMW i3S. I wanted to get a hold of one to do our Inside EV 70-mile range test and also charging tests. Problem is, because it's not a new vehicle, they're not available on any press fleets. So I had to go to BMW of North America and kind of ask for a favor. And it took a while, but they were able to get one for me. And it was actually a 2019, but it only had like 480 miles on it. So it's a brand new car. And there's no difference really in the 2020s and the 2019s. They both have the newer or the latest battery pack, which is a 42.2 kilowatt hour battery pack. So I was able to get that thing out on the highway and drive it at a constant 70 miles an hour. And I finished up with 141 miles. It's EPA range rated at 153 miles per charge. So I came pretty close to the EPA range rating. It was a good day, very hot. It was in the mid 90s. So I had the air conditioning on the whole time, very little wind. So it was good. It was good range weather, other than the fact that the AC was cranking for the entire trip, and finished up with a consumption rate of 3.6 miles per kilowatt hour. For our European friends, I think that translates to 17.2 kilowatt hours per 100 kilometers. So it did okay. I thought it was going to do a little better in my time with my i3s. And I've owned two i3s. I owned a 2014 with a range extender that had the smaller battery, the smallest battery, the 21.6 kilowatt hour battery pack. And then I had a 2018 i3S with the 33.2 kilowatt hour battery pack. I never owned one with this latest, the largest battery pack. I'm fairly experienced driving an i3, and I thought I was going to average a little more than 3.7 or 3.8 at that speed, but wasn't to be. We averaged that. It was going between 3.6 and 3.7 the whole time, and then I ended at 3.6. I think if I drove further, it would have ended at 3.7. It was like right on the edge. My entire drive, it kept bouncing up and down, depending on if I was going up a little bit hill or down a grade a little. And that makes sense because it has the 42.2 kilowatt hour battery pack usable is a little over 30, I think a little over 39 kilowatt hours. So if you do the math, it's right there at 3.6, 3.7 at 70 miles an hour. If you're going to finish up with around 141, 142 miles of range, probably could have squeezed out another couple miles. I don't drive it till it dies like Kyle does, but I do drive it down to zero, and that's what we finished up with. Little disappointing news on the charging. I like to, after I do the range test, I like to record the charging sessions of these cars on Electrify America charging stations. I'll set up my camera. I'm already at zero, so it's great. I can plug in and record 0 to 80%. But I had an Electrify America fail. I plugged in, walked away, and I walked back like 20 minutes later, and I was already being charged idle fees because the station shut off. I didn't get the notification because I'm using my phone to record the session. So I'm sure it sent the notification out, but shut off after only 5 minutes and it was at like 9%. So there blows the charging station test. I wasn't going to get out and drive it down to zero again and come back. I didn't have the car enough time. I had to head back to BMW. It was a short-term lease. So unfortunately, I don't have the 0 to 80% recording like I like to do.
Right. About how long do you think it would have taken to go 0 to 80% under normal circumstances?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure BMW says 42 minutes because it accepts up to 50 kilowatts, and the IQ will get pretty close to that, 47, 48 kilowatts. So I think 42 minutes, 0 to 80% is what BMW claims on the new battery pack. Unfortunately, I hadn't owned one, so I don't know. I know on my previous one, it was quicker because the battery pack was smaller. But I called Electrify America, gave them a piece of my mind, and I think they're going to be getting back to me at some point soon.
Is that the same size pack in the Mini?
No, the Mini's much smaller. The Mini is a little bit larger than the previous generation i3s. The Mini's, I think, is 35.5, right, Kyle?
Oh, okay.
And the previous generation i3 was 33.2. And they use different cells, so it's totally different.
Wow. That's interesting. I didn't know if there's any parallels we could have drawn between them, but no chance.
Yeah, no, it's a different battery pack. I know a lot of people assume that, but a lot of the power electronics in the car, the motor and everything has been shared, but they did have to totally redesign the battery pack because this was, it's for a multi-platform, the Mini. It's the same platform for the gas version, so they kind of have to stuff batteries wherever they can put them, and it's a totally different platform.
Interesting that the battery size is like doubled basically over the life of the i3, though. It was like 21 kilowatt hours, you said before?
Yeah, 21.6 was the first one,
right?
The original i3, and now we're up to 42, 0.2. So, yeah. A lot of people throw a lot of hate towards the i3, I understand it's super unconventional, styling and also the way the doors open up, but I really love the i3s. If it wasn't so expensive, I'd have another one now. It's a great runaround car. I actually enjoy driving it more than my Model 3. It's a great little runaround, zip into New York City, park the thing, come back. I like the high seating position. It's all glass around me. You could see from every angle. We don't have kids, so the back seat, the coach doors isn't a problem. I love that car. I sitting in it and doing this range test, I was like, damn, I ought to go get another one. I miss it.
Well, they could use some sales, I believe. I believe their sales are down quite a bit this year.
Yeah, it's like down like 85% in the U.S., but that's part of the reason is they're not stocking the cars anymore. You have to order one if you want to get one.
And it's a supply. They're pretty popular in Europe, right?
They still are, yeah. I mean, up until this year, every year the i3 was made, it sold more than the previous year, globally at least, not in any one particular market. So, I mean, that tells a lot that the vehicle's been out since late 2013 in Europe, and every year sales increased. It's not the total failure that it seems like it gets painted as in a lot of, articles from different journalists that, it was a flop, and it's why BMW pulled back on their electrification plans. It's unfortunate because I think it gets a bad rap. It's a really cool, fun to drive electric car. Yes, it's a very poor value proposition because BMW did everything completely out of the box with that car, with carbon fiber, reinforced plastic, used all these materials that they've never used before. It ended up being a very expensive car to make, and BMW promised their shareholders, we will not sell this car at a loss, which is why it's a $50,000 car, and it's a tough value proposition at that price.
Yeah, sure is, man. I'd have a hard time shelling out that kind of money. And I like the way it looks too. I love the glass, that glass back, and you know, it's kind of narrow, and yeah, it's a pretty nice little car. So Kyle, what are you driving this week?
Well, we have an i3 as well on the topic. I think a used i3 makes a lot of sense, at least here in the US. You can pick them up for 10 grand.
There's some good deals out there. I almost bought one.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard not to. For $10,000 or $12,000, how much lower is it really going to go? The older Leafs are definitely worth less, so they'll always be worth less. The i3 is a great car. We use it to shuttle the dogs around town, like Tom was saying. It's a great car just to rip around in, so we're really pleased with ours. It's the third one in our family. It's the second one that I've had, so it's a really awesome car. But to your question, Dom, we are on a big road trip, and we started this past Monday. It's day five today. And day five, basically what we had done is we drove from North Carolina down here to Florida. And then we sat on the beach for the last 4 days. Nice. And so this makes it day five of our road trip. However, while I was here, I was able to do some Model 3 Standard Plus tests, which was pretty good because that's what my mother drives. And there's a version 3 supercharger not by. So I filmed a 0 to 100% version 3 charging curve.
Oh, nice. Can you talk about that a little bit yet?
Yeah, absolutely. It's 170 kilowatt peak. Actually, it peaked briefly at 172 kilowatt, which is very good. And it seems to pull quite hard all the way up to 50%. 50% still right around 100 kilowatt. So it's really a great charging curve, especially compared to the long range packs. The long range packs just got a new software update that I think makes them charge more aggressively since Tom did his test. So I'm going to try that out on this trip as well.
And that's on a V3 charger?
Yeah, the V2 can only output 150 kilowatt peak. So this can do 250 per post, but the standard pluses are limited at 170.
Right. Nice, not bad. And so I guess you're going to head up. I'm in North Florida, I guess I'll be seeing you tomorrow when we got some shenanigans lined up for the weekend.
That's right. Yeah. So we have we're in the midst of packing the car, but as soon as we're off the podcast, we're going to continue and head out and head up towards your way in Northern Florida, where we have a campsite booked tonight where we're going to try all the gear for the first time. So I'd like to get there while it's light out so we can see how to set everything up.
You're not an experienced camper, Carl? You're not pitched the tent too many times before?
No, the first time I think I've ever pitched a tent in my life was just a couple of days ago in my parents' living room here.
What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah. We have a video on our Twitter, on Out of Specs Twitter. You got to go see it, where we walk through it fills up the entire condo. So it's pretty crazy.
Oh, I need to see that.
So the plan for this trip is it's going to be, you know, anywhere between 4 and 8 weeks, maybe longer, maybe less, where we just live out of the Model 3 as much as we can.
And there's your tent on the screen for people who...
There's the tent on the screen.
Oh, it's a nice condom too. Jeez.
My goodness. That is sweet. I mean, it's going to be fine. I mean, that's not like a massive tent to build for the first time.
That is
It's actually all the walls pop out, so there's no poles. It's really easy to get up and going. It only takes about, I think we did it in under a minute.
Wow!
Oh, that's amazing. But go on.
What about putting it all back together again?
Yeah, that took about 2 minutes, but still not bad.
Not bad.
You can sleep in the car if it goes wrong, but the car's probably full of all your gear.
And dogs.
Right. Yeah.
You have dogs.
Dog mode is on.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you need a big tent. Hey, did
what
you bring
what we really need is a Tesla semi for this trip, but we're squeezing it all into a Model 3. You should see just every cubby hole, every inch of space is just completely sucked up. We have the big box on the roof now that, you know, we had to stand on to close. So we're jam-packed.
So if I race you tomorrow, my 2015 Spark EV, I might have a chance. Is that what you're saying?
I think that's going to be the funny thing. Like, here's a Model 3 loaded to way more weight than what is ever considered safe. Yeah.
Right.
And can we keep up with your Spark?
Should be interesting. We'll have to do a assault.
It won't be a competition. I'll still blow you away, but I'll put it in chill mode. Make it look close.
Maybe we'll do a salam or something. Is what we have to do some.
Right. We should do the chill mode thing, because Tom, wasn't it the Mini SE That was the car, right? That was identical to the Model 3 Performance in chill mode in acceleration.
We drag raced and it was almost, I mean, the Mini actually jumped the line on the Model 3. So I got a couple feet in front of them, and then it was like dead even the whole way down the track. It was pretty cool. So yeah. I wonder how the Spark would do against the Mini. The Spark's a quick car, so
Spark's really fast.
That would be an interesting. That'd be a real interesting race.
What's the 0-60 on the Mini again?
Not good.
Like yeah, more than slow. 8 seconds?
I think it was right around 7, right?
Yeah, okay. 7, something
that's
like that.
That's like the Spark EV around there, yeah. Around 7.2.
Well, we're doing a chill mode drag race again.
All right, that sounds good. I'll have to find a parking lot.
Right, just a piece of closed road or something, you know.
Sure. All right, well, let's get on to some stories. And we're starting today off with the debut of the Audi Q4 e-tron concept. No, e-tron Sportback concept. We've already seen the Audi Q4 e-tron concept. And now this is the Sportback version. And it's also built on the Volkswagen MEB platform. And like its long roof sister, it has an 82 kilowatt hour battery and is given a 280 mile WLTP range. Charging max is 125 kilowatts, and so it takes about 30 minutes to go from 0 to 80%, and it's all-wheel drive. And do we have a pic we can throw up there, Martin, for the viewers?
Just bring this up so you can see Sportback in all its glory. Kyle will hate it because it's not dog friendly.
Right. Yes,
just take it.
It looks nice. It looks. I mean, it's called the concept, but it's about as production ready as. Well, it just looks like it's ready to go. And, you know, they've got form, as in they've made the Audi 50 and the 55 Sportback. So, and, you know, it's not that hard to chop the end of a car off. So it's a concept, but it looks like oven ready. It's good to go.
It's amazing that this thing, so this gets 280 miles of range WLTP. So more than the original, 55, e-tron 55, but it's like $30,000 cheaper.
Yeah.
That's just crazy to me, that kind of money difference.
It's like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but the quality is going to be different. It'll drive totally different than normal e-tron will.
Right. This is basically a VW i4, but in Audi clothing and Audi interior. The interior is really nice too, by the way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like we're saying, so the official production version should show up, I think, late this year or early next year.
And it was next year. I think I read next year. Yeah.
Right. I don't expect a whole lot of big changes. You know, it should be, you know, the interior will be a little more production, but, you know, it's probably very close to what we're seeing here now, right?
Doesn't that interior look like BMW i interior?
Right?
Yeah, because really, it's got these long lines that run.
Yeah, it looks like a mixture between the i4 and the i8, actually.
Just change the Audi logo to BMW. No one would know.
Really, to me, when I looked at it, I was like, am I looking at a BMW i? I mean, I like it, and I like this vehicle. I like the small crossover. And to put into perspective, this is about half a foot shorter than, say, a Model Y or a Mustang Mach-E. So it's a little more compact than those crossovers. And to me, that's a sweet spot for me. I don't need a big vehicle. As I mentioned earlier, my wife and I don't have kids, so we don't need a huge back seat. But it's the hatchback that's going to have a decent amount of space back there. And I like this. I like this vehicle. That would be on my hit list if it were to be available.
Yeah, so you think it's like good battery size.
So you think it's like a little smaller than the Model Y?
It's about 6 inches. I looked it up. Yeah, shorter than the Model Y.
Okay.
Yeah. It starts in that territory of actually a car that we're going to mention next because I've seen the running order, but it sits in that territory. Oh, Polestar 2 as well. That's over here, the Polestar 2 splits with the Model 3, actually, because we can't buy the Model Y yet. There's no right-hand drive versions. But again, this will probably split some Model Y buyers. Maybe would it come in cheaper than the Model Y Performance, maybe, or maybe not actually, but you know, it
should be cheaper than the Model Y Performance, I think.
Should be, but it'll be more expensive than the all-wheel drive. long range. Yeah. I try and get my models correct. So again, it'll be, you know, it's going to lose the 0-60 battle with Tesla, because everything does. And if you are preoccupied with those things, then it's never going to win those battles, because nothing does. Right. But how quick do you want to go? Like,
well, this one does a 0-60 in about 6.3 seconds. So, you know, it's not dog slow, but it's not, you know, it's not a race car, but it's a crossover. It's plenty.
We'll see an S version of this, knowing Audi.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's right. always an S. Yes.
There's
yeah.
always an S. And then maybe if we're lucky, we'll get an RS, which means that, you know, I think we're going to see the same product trend that we've seen from their cars for years and with the e-tron now, where we'll get the slow, basic, everyday one that's nice and comfortable, and then they'll launch the one that you really want later on.
It's like opposite of what Tesla does when they release the performance versions kind of first, higher trims.
Well, so, the Germans are known to bring performance versions later on. Like the M5 always comes 2 years after launch.
Right.
So it's just not uncommon for them to do these types of things.
Right. So as it stands, it comes with like a 200 horsepower in the back motors and then 100 horsepower in the front motor. So that's 301 horsepower altogether, which, you know, it's not that's a decent amount, but in today's horsepower crazy world, you know, there's lots of room for improvement. We can see, we saw the Model Y dynoed this week at 500 horsepower. I think that was a performance. Was that a performance? The guys up in Ontario, I believe, did that Mountain Pass performance.
Yep.
Second on the dyno. Yeah. Right on. So anything else we want to say about this thing?
Make it.
I hope they make it.
Make it now.
Right. Now they're going to make it.
Come on. They can make it. They know how to make cars. They know how to do good cars as well.
But so speaking of the VW MEB platform vehicles, the what is it? The Cupra Elborn Seat debuted this week as well, and that's a little hot hatch. Now Seat, if you don't know, is like a Spanish brand, and Cupra is its like performance subdivision
under the Volkswagen umbrella.
Right. And so this is like a basically, oh, this thing looks so good. So it's basically like a spicy VW ID3 that unfortunately we won't get here either, unless they rebadge it and sell it to us as like an Audi or a V. I'm not sure if they would bring
a new Golf.
Yeah, I mean, it's so hard because they already had the ID3 that they could send as a Golf, right?
Right. I don't know if they would call it ID for the US market. I'm not sure how well that'd go over here.
Hmm.
I mean, we're going to get the ID4 as an ID4.
But is it officially confirmed as being named ID4? Or are they going to do like a Alltrack name or something like that?
No, I believe it's ID4. I'm hoping they don't draw it out like the Audi, but we just did with Audi Q4 Sportback e-tron. God, you know, it's a lot.
It's not as bad as some BMWs. Those you need a billboard on the back of the car to keep writing.
Right. So yeah, I just love the way this thing looks. That's why I threw it up in the on the list of things to talk about a little bit today. Just it's the blue on the outside with the I don't know if that's a satin finish on the paint or not, but the copper accents on the wheels and then the details around the grill, and then that carries over on the inside. They got that same kind of, and I like the shape of the seats. It looks so nice, and it's got the flat bottom wheel, copper accents on the dash.
Wow. No, I reckon I reckon VW's hand was forced on this, and here's my conspiracy theory. This was shown off at the motor show last year as a Seat. So this should have been the Seat Elborn. Seat, as Carl said, is the Spanish bit of VW, and it is that the cars are sold on price, and you don't buy a Seat over here in Europe because maybe the Spanish buy them because they're domestic, but you don't buy them because of any other reason apart from it's a pretty good, you get a lot of car for a good price, right?
It's a value play, basically.
That's what the brand stands for. And that's absolutely fine because VW need them in their locker, right? So it's not uber cheap, but it's going to be cheaper. And then when they showed off the Seat Elborn at the motor show, I forget which one it was a day after the ID3. And the styling, everyone raved about the styling more than the ID3. It overshadowed the ID3, which is, you know, the glory car from VW.
Yeah.
And And it was going to be cheaper. So exactly, you're getting exactly the same car, interior the same, software architecture the same. They'll just sprinkle some SEAT stuff on top and change the old logo, and the same car. And it would have had to have been cheaper than the ID3. That's not going to work because right. the ID3 is a troubled launch as it is. So what do we do? Actually, let's launch Cupra, the performance bit of SEAT, as its own brand. They also, a bit that in the press release that most outlets didn't pick up on is Cupra are going to build out a dealer network as well for the Cupra brand. And so they're pushing Cupra hard. Of course, it's performance. They hardcored the styling even more. They throw it back up again. Interior, nice. But otherwise, the specs, exactly what you'd get with the ID3. The 82 kilowatt hour battery, which is the MEB platform that we just talked about, on the Audi, which is 77 usable. This would get you 310 miles of range, but so would the ID3. This'll get you the same charging speed as the ID3. And so how on earth is VW going to sell ID3s when they've got the SEAT Elborn potentially nice and cheaper? Make it a Cupra, make it performance,
right?
Even if it's the same price point. But actually with this, they can sell this for more than the ID3. It's more desirable, right? And they've solved their problems. And then all of a sudden they're not cannibalizing themselves. This car will be made alongside the ID3 in exactly the same factory in Germany, even though it's the Spanish brand. This one won't be made in their Spanish factory. It's going to be made alongside the ID3.
So the only thing that I find disappointing about this car is that, you know, okay, so it's being going to be under the Cooper umbrella, which is like has been traditionally a performance arm of a SEAT, but they didn't even give a 0-60 time. They gave us a 0-30 time.
Sus, very sus. Like, why would you give a 0-30 to 30 miles an hour time? It's pointless, absolutely pointless.
And that was 2.9 seconds, which is...
So all EVs.
I don't know. I don't know if that's fast or not. I don't time 0-30s. But
the only car does that to 60. So I'd say it's not as fast.
The only reason you do a 0-30 time is because you don't want to give the 0-60 time.
Exactly.
Oh, come on. Just don't put anything in. Just keep it a mystery. But yeah, as you say as well, sad that it's not going to be coming to the US market because I don't know. VW say they can't sell cars in that market. And maybe they're right.
In the US, you drive around and you don't see sedans anymore. For the launch of the F30 3 Series, which is the last generation, they were everywhere. Every street corner had a 3 Series. Now it's all X3s everywhere. I don't see any new 3 Series. I've seen 5 and they've been out 2 years.
Yeah. Just on the theme of sedans going away, GM ended this. Was the, not the Sonic? What's the was it the Sonic? They cut. What's that midsize sedan GM?
Yeah, they stopped the Sonic production. Sonic. And they're going to electrify the factory.
So now there's.
So they made a Sonic up to this point.
Who knew? They were still making them.
I thought that was just a little garbage trash can people drove around for like 10 years ago.
Right. But, I was in the factory this earlier this year, and they were making them alongside the Bolt EV.
Yeah.
Wow. In the same factory. So the only sedans that GM makes, we need a sad trombone sound here, is the Spark, and not the electric version, the sad gasoline version, and the Malibu, which is like a rental car queen or whatever. But yeah.
Well, so they bought
two.
Ford and GM both announced that they were getting out of the sedan business.
Ford also.
That's nothing new. You know, they both gave us their roadmap and said, you know, in 3 or 4 years, we're out of the sedan business. It's all crossovers, SUVs, and trucks. So, you know, shouldn't be surprising. They crunch the numbers. They see that people aren't buying these vehicles anymore. Look at parking lots now. All you see are crossovers and SUVs.
Right.
So, you know,
it'd be interesting actually if it can make a comeback, you know, especially in the EV space, because having a crossover like a high riding vehicle makes it harder to get range. You know, you're just eating up batteries for nothing. So, you know, there's still like a market segment waiting for a company like Lucid. Their car, the Air, is kind of a low roof sedan. Right.
Yeah, but you know, we saw this a great success with Model 3 being a sedan, but it's really one of the only successful sedans. But now that Model Y is here, why would you ever buy a Model 3?
That is true.
Performance handling,
right?
It handles better than, you know,
they drive the same.
Exactly.
I've had both on track. You get out of one and into the other, and you do not give up anything in Model Y. And this is, you know, full sideways tire smoking, you know, really good chassis control on both cars.
You got the same lap times?
I don't think I ran both on the same tires. I also haven't timed a Model Y lap, but I keep meaning to do a Model Y for one lap, but I just haven't yet. But I will say, like, now that Model Y is here, right, it's a better car. It gets pretty much the same range. You're giving up 10 miles, Tom, 15 miles, something like
that. That's about it.
Yeah. And the price is, it's within $3,000 or $4,000 for the comp, you know, for the same trim. Now, we don't have the lower trims of Model Y yet. But when those do come, I don't see, like, right now you buy a Model 3 Standard Plus because it's a huge price delta to a Model Y. But if you're getting a long range car, you get a Model Y.
Now, I agree. I own a Model 3, and after driving the Y for a while, doing my range tests, you know, and I got out of it and said, you know what, if this were available last year when I got my 3, I'd probably have gotten this. Although I will say I like the way the 3 looks better. You know, it just, the Y just, I don't know, the proportions just don't seem right to me visually.
It looks a little blurred.
I would give that up for the added utility of having that extra space and the hatchback for not much more money. Actually, here in New Jersey, it would actually cost me less now because since I bought my Model 3, we started this new state rebate where I'd get $5,000 off the purchase of a Y. So I could actually buy one now for less than what I paid for my 3, similarly spec'd. So I'd probably have a Y if it were available when I got my 3.
Tom, I have something I wanted to bring up on the show. I found a brand new iPaste. Did you run the story? Someone ran the story on Inside EVs about $20,000 off.
Oh, yes.
I didn't run the story, but I looked it up and I even followed the link to that, to the iPaste. Yeah.
Right.
It looked like it was a demo though, right? Because it had like 3,000 miles.
Right, yeah, it's 3,000 or 4,000 miles, but this particular iPaste was $40,000 off before the tax credit and before Tom's $5,000 credit. So why don't you just go and get a free iPaste, Tom?
I couldn't. That was out of state. You have to buy it from a dealer in New Jersey and register it here in New Jersey. So I wouldn't qualify for that. But yeah, I looked at. I mean, the sticker was like 85, I think.
Right? 85, and it was 48 before the tax credit.
That's
ridiculous.
I mean, I don't know how I honestly was like, let's go trade in Alyssa's i3.
Right.
But it wouldn't make it to Florida where we got to trade it in.
Yeah. That's the problem. It's a little hobbled with the range and the charging speed and everything.
Yeah. Well, I guess we could have run her car on gas, but you know, I'm going by that dealer today. So I was thinking about stopping in to just look at it.
Right.
Yeah. Just to see it's in one piece. And
yeah.
And
just to see and maybe make an offer. I don't know.
Wow. So, and who would have thought this whole digression came from the Sonic? We have a lot to be grateful for that. That little car going away. It was an interesting discussion.
The Sonic has ever done.
Yeah. I think I rented one of those there a few years back. It was okay. It was,
I don't know if we actually said at the beginning of that, of the digression, it's going because they need room for the Bolt EUV.
That's
if
right.
We didn't say that, but that's why they're using that line for the EUV.
Right.
So would you buy the Bolt EUV over the Bolt EV?
Oh
man, I saw them both side by side, and man, it was kind of hard to see the difference. Actually, to be really honest,
that's what I'm saying. They look the same.
I forget. I mean, I know there's some like dimensional differences, but you know, and they didn't list inside the EUV either. I don't think so. I didn't sit in that. I sat in the refreshed Bolt EV, which you know I thought was such a huge improvement, but. Yeah, and it looks better.
It needs it. The one thing, I mean, I've driven so many Bolts, and I love it as an EV. I mean, they did a great job with it. I love the regenerative braking system. I still say it's the best of any electric vehicle on the market today, but I just couldn't bring myself to buy one because I just don't like the interior.
Right.
It's so plasticky and cheap. I mean, I love the controls and the infotainment system, the information that they give you. GM nailed it. They did so much right with that car. Right. But the seats are terrible. I have a bad back. I can't sit in one for more than a half an hour without having my back bother me. They're so narrow, unsupportive. And the interior, the dashboard, that white plastic they have, every time I look at it, I just see like airport bathroom. I just can't get beyond that. It just like, I don't know what they did with that. So I really looking forward to the Bolt interior refresh.
Well, that's going away, and you'll have some nice soft touch materials across the dash and nice and dark, not hard plastic. And yeah.
It needs something.
So Martin, want to roll us some tape?
Oh, go on. Should we have a look at a video that hit the internet this week, and then we'll get into what it's all about. Let's have a look from our sister site, Motor One.
Okay. So we're looking for Sasquatch. Is that what's going on here?
So for those listening on the audio podcast, this is a very shaky piece of camera phone footage shot through about three rows of trees. It's out of focus, and it's meant to look like someone has kind of sneaked into a test track somewhere, and they are filming a crazy stripped out car doing donuts and wrecking the tires.
You get a little
sound. That's what we're looking at.
You got a little sound there.
I don't think I can bring the sound through. I didn't get that one sorted before the podcast. Okay. But and then it stops.
Right.
Really conveniently in a place where you get a great view of it between the trees. Who would have thought? I'm amazed. Amazed. Amazed.
I almost like it was staged.
What luck.
And then the car sits there doing nothing in clear vision. Then it speeds off again in just a moment, does some more donuts. I wouldn't have known what this car, I don't know this car well enough to know what it is, because it's got the front ripped off and it's got the rear ripped off and just massive fans. I'm just not familiar enough with the shape of this body to instantly know if I hadn't been told what it is, but I'm sure you're about to tell us.
Well, as you can see, it's doing donuts here, and there's like billows of smoke coming from all four tires. And when it shows that, when it had the back view, that you could see like there's like three huge fans across the back. But if you look inside, you can see there's like typical kind of race car roll cage thing going on for structural support. So it's obviously a race car. And I think Jalopnik reported on this yesterday, but they broke the story and they mentioned that, you know, it's a Mustang Mach-E, Ford Mustang Mach-E. And it's really hard to tell, like, it, as you said, because there's like nothing on the front. It's all open. You can't really see. There's a great shot. We have some stills there as well, where you can see the front steering arms, you know, as it's coming around for a spin around. But so we have a little bit of an inside scoop on this, because we actually know what it is, but we can't say anything about it, because some of us are under non-disclosure agreements.
I think we can say, you know, obviously this is our track. You know, if anyone's seen any of our original Inside EVs content, we film all of our car reviews, drag races, tests at this particular facility, facility.
This is the North Carolina Center for Automotive Research, or NCAR, or better known as the Autospec.
Right. Yeah. Autospec track is easier to remember than North Carolina Center for Automotive Research, which is why we call it the Autospec track. Right. But yeah, NC Car Works as well. It's a really cool car. It seemingly seems to be very fast. Lots of donuts, lots of tire smoke. Obviously gets me really excited when this thing starts skidding around. And, you know, I think it's awesome to see some sort of Ford sanctioned product, because keep in mind the Mach-E hasn't gone on sale yet, right? So this has to be a manufacturer backed effort of some kind to basically make a really seemingly performance oriented version of their car, which is, you know, will this see public streets? We don't know. We have no clue. All I can say is I hope, because I would like to drive my Mach-E like that every day.
Right. So I believe on Jalopnik they were doing some speculating. They were saying either it's a Ford vehicle for like a Ford racing program, or there's another outfit, RTR something like that, that works in conjunction with Ford and has their own racing program. And actually, I think that's owned by Vince. What's that guy's name? Vince Kyle?
Yeah, Von Gitten. Yeah, Von's part of it. Yep.
Who does like a Ken Block. I think, I'm not sure, maybe I know Ken Block better. He does like a lot of Gymkhana videos, like crazy driving, lots of donuts videos. So, and it could be a Ken Block thing. We don't know, or we can't say for sure what
exactly. No, we have no clue. There. We don't know.
Right. So that's it was pretty exciting though. And so the regular Mach-E is like a 4 all-wheel drives, has 2 motors. But we don't know what this has, but you know, it's sure.
Well, it certainly sounds different than what we've seen from Mach-E's in the, at least the original drives. And of course in the UK, they did some driving. I mean, you can hear the gear ratio, right? I mean, the motors are spinning real fast at low speed. So that's an indication of something. It's definitely got a lot of work done to it. It's definitely missing a lot of parts. Which means it's a, you know, full race car. You can see the racing seats in there. You can see a roll cage. Well, it's definitely meant for extreme use scenario. I think it'll be a serious car.
I just remembered, at one point you can see actually there's somebody in the back seat of that.
Yeah.
I thought was kind of odd because like in a race car, you have a front seat. So I don't know if that's like a camera guy kind of situation to have back.
Well,
there,
you can see the in this picture here. On the YouTube side, you can see right, you know, next to the driver's head, there's a little white blurb. That's probably it saying Recaro or Sparco or the name of the seats. But you can also see that same thing in the back. So this car could have 4 racing seats in it, which is very interesting.
Mm. Yeah. And not very kind of usual for if you were stripping out a car for the track, you'd normally just have 1, maybe 2 seats up the front. So that's interesting. The performance looks crazy on it. They're just, you know, it's every performance lover's like wet dream. And go and watch the video as well, and the sound will be on, and it's not kid friendly, I must admit. And that's what was frustrating for me was this is so exciting because I love. Like this is a sign of the EV market maturing when people start to tinker with stuff and when they have a play. And it's great when tuners come in and all those kind of more niche things happen, like has happened with combustion cars forever. It's a sign that the EV market is becoming more than just this little niche thing, and it's becoming more mainstream, and it's maturing to the point where it's worth someone's while doing these things. And so it's so exciting. But yeah, there is a commentary as the person filming it mentions a few things as they're watching it, like, oh my goodness, what's this? He's just not a good enough actor to pull it off, unfortunately. So that riled me. And then he kind of appears to get rumbled at the end and runs away. Well, he does. I mean, it's just not realistic, unfortunately.
Well, Tom and I, you know, Tom, you know the facility. Obviously, I'm there every day. You're not walking in there.
No.
Like, you're in the middle of nowhere. It's not like we don't have spectators that come through. So I don't see how they could have, how someone could have filmed this.
Yeah, and, sadly
and,
not
and
real.
And knowing your track, Kyle, if I were sneaking in there, and I mean, obviously people could trek through, you know, a half a mile of woods to get to it. I don't think that's where I would set up, even though I mean that is that little square portion of the extended asphalt is where more testing would be. There's no like easy way to get out of there because it's right by the entrance and everything. You know, I would have, you know, hung out on the other side of the track and recorded cars driving around and, you know, kind
right
of
up on the hill
weeds, and no one would have seen me. But where he is, that's, you know, that's like they just let him out and he walked through like 6 feet of trees and stood there. He didn't come in from the other way. No way. That's this is a setup. It's obvious. If you read the comments on Jalopnik, you know, everybody's like, oh, come on. Like you couldn't do a better job than that.
Yeah. And that's a shame because when something as exciting as this makes its way onto the internet, it deserves to be done really well, and it deserves, you know, either a you know, either a famous driver or just someone presenting it to the world for the first time, it can still be kept under wraps. And so whoever this is, obviously it is in a way connected with Ford, because you have to be able to get the car to strip it out. So whether it is, you know, whether it's straight up Ford or whether it's someone who works with them, there could have been such an amazing presentation of this, which would have got, firstly, a lot more publicity than a leak. And also done it in a really a cool way that would have got those people, especially, you know, I think a lot about those petrol heads that still look at EVs as a curiosity. Look, we know differently, and you watching, you know differently, but there's a huge part of the internet out there that still think that EVs are these little kind of golf carts. And it would have just been another cool, like all like the drag runs that we see, it would have been another cool little way just to demonstrate how amazing electric power is. And they not only missed the opportunity, they also blew it by making this so-called shot through the tree. So that was my frustration, but I would love to see it properly now present. Now it's out there. I would love it to be properly presented and have someone walk around it, you know, as much as they can. If it's secret, just show as much as they can about it, because I'm pumped about seeing more about this.
Yeah, I understand there's a lot going on here. So it's going to be really interesting when they do actually roll footage that, you know, show us what is inside and what it can do, and with actually the proper bodywork all in place like it's supposed to be and everything. But we should move on.
And they absolutely will. They're already showing us that they want us to know about this car and talk about it. So it's not like this is super secret and we're never going to hear about it and it's just going to go away. You know, I think we're going to get a proper video now. Especially, you know, they're reading the comments and seeing like people are like, give me a break, you know, you know, and they'll probably watch this podcast and be like, all right, you know, we tried something, it didn't work. Now let's do it right and show them what we're doing. So, I mean, it might not happen next week, but I think we're going to get to see. We haven't seen the last of this vehicle.
Yeah.
I'd rather have really good really good engineering and very poor marketing than really good marketing and really poor engineering.
Yeah. True. Yeah. So as long as it's engineered well, and just throw some black cloth over the dash, or throw some black cloth over if there's any control electronics that would give it something away in a video. We don't need to see everything. So
we just want to see what it's like up close.
Yeah. Yeah. It can be done. And I'm sure that I hope they do.
Okay. So, definitely look that up, and so take a listen to what this car sounds like. It's pretty awesome. So moving on, Tesla Cybertruck reservations have opened up in China. Will people buy it there? I mean, it's already got a ton of reservations. I think the estimates are around like 700,000, you know, reservations, low cost reservations. So some of those could fall through, but China's a huge country. Is this, you know, I'm on the fence. I don't know. It could either go like crazy nuts as far as like popularity, or it could be.
Well, Tom is our resident expert on China. And Tom, do you picture just people flying through traffic in one of these, pushing cars out of the way? Because this is how I imagine it would go in dense China traffic.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I don't know if I saw a single full-size pickup truck in my 4 or 5 times in China. They've got these crazy like makeshift trucks that they've kind of built with motors outside the back and pulleys and everything, like hauling bales of hay and whatnot. But like, it's not a pickup truck market. It's not a large vehicle market. I mean, they do like their SUVs. That's becoming more popular, especially, you know, the more wealthy people. But I don't know. I was really thinking about this and wondering how I was going to, you know, frame that. My instinct is to say, no, this is not a vehicle made for China. But then I don't know, that they do love Tesla in China. And, you know, it's hard.
They love to stand out.
It's not going to be as popular as in the U.S. Will they sell some of them? Yeah. But I don't see this being a big, bit moving, you know, largely in the Chinese market. Just not the right vehicle for China. But, you know, I don't know. Tesla just keeps proving everybody wrong. Every time we say, oh, this isn't going to work, that's not going to work. It does. So I'm really interested to see how that works out. I can't see these on the just in the, you know, inching away in the streets of Shanghai, you know, so street light, you know.
Speaking of the streets of Shanghai, for those of us who haven't been to China, I mean, I've seen videos of China and stuff, and they have a lot of big boulevards. Do they also have like a lot of small roads and things too, where this would be kind of difficult?
You know, most of the cities have decent size roads. They're wider than like European cities,
right.
But they're just so jam packed, and it's almost as if a lot of the streets didn't account for parking, but people park there anyway. So half the tires are up on the sidewalk, and you know, it's just super tight. I don't know. I don't think this is the right vehicle for that market. But I'm sure they'll sell some of them, but it won't be anything like US, you know, or, you know, I can't imagine it. But like I said, I don't know. I almost should just stay away from predicting Tesla, because right. it doesn't conform to the norms of reality, Tesla. And, you know, who knows?
Well, that's reassuring, because for me, you know, I think it's really, for most people, it's too much vehicle. And a lot of people are buying it because it's got, you know, offers super utility and performance, and the price point isn't so bad. But really, it's a lot of vehicle. And it seems like, that takes extra batteries and extra energy to run. And from an environmental standpoint, it's, you know, we really don't need millions and millions of Cybertrucks taking over the, you know, when the Model 3, the Model Y, I mean, if it's just to stay with the Tesla brand, you know, with those vehicles, I think it would have a smaller environmental footprint.
Yeah, I agree to that point. But also, don't forget, hopefully they're replacing these giant full-size pickup trucks, which aren't smaller than this and consume a lot more energy and produce a lot more greenhouse gases and pollution. So in that regard, it's not like, you know, people are getting out of a Golf and into a Cybertruck. You know,
maybe someone will do that. There's
going to be some of that, but the vast majority, I think, you know, that's not going to be the case.
I think it's going to be the first pickup truck that sways normal car buyers up to the truck market for, like you had mentioned, a very small subset of people. But there's a lot of people now that would never drive an F-150 or a Ram 1500, but want to buy a Cybertruck.
I've seen a lot of that online. Yeah,
they need to see it first, because however big you think the Cybertruck is, it's bigger. I mean, it won't work here. It won't work here.
You'd have to pull off the road so that other cars go by. Roads.
Honestly, and that's like, as Tom was saying, with China, and it just depends how big. It, you know, kind of funny story. I came over to Miami last year to see our friends at MyEV headquarters, and they'd got a Model X lined up for me to drive for the few days that I'd flown in to see them. And my first thought was, oh God, really? That's such a big car. And then I realized I'm in America, and actually the Model X is tiny, because I had these
not a big car.
Yeah. It's like over here, model, when you see one, it's imposing. And yet when I was in Miami driving around, there's these massive trucks that don't even exist in the UK market going past me. And I actually felt in a Model X, I just kind of felt normal sized car. And your parking spaces are bigger. The car parks here are still, the lines were painted on the floor, you know, 40 years ago, when, you know, minis were really mini,
you know, yeah, even you had in a normal horses and buggies behind.
Yeah,
them.
Right. So even in a normal sized car, when you go to a car park and you sort of be careful how you open the door and you inch it open and don't scratch the car next to me, let alone a Model X, you're not getting out of that thing. Cybertruck, no way, absolutely no way. So I think people need to see it, and at least just see it in the metal at least once, please, before you buy one.
Right on. So sticking with Tesla, let's talk about Elon Musk says that Tesla is very close to level 5 self-driving technology. Autopilot is about to be a real, you know, thing, except level 5, you know, level 5 to me is like no steering wheel, right? It does everything. You just get in.
Well, it's SAE.
Just check the time. Oh, look, it's that time of year when Elon, look at that, regular as clockwork. It's that time of year when he predicts full self-driving by the end of the year.
Feature complete.
He's been doing it for the last 4 years.
Right.
Yeah, I love him. I love him. Yeah. It's not coming.
We should just throw a party every year when it starts. We'll have a celebration.
I mean, it has made a lot of improvements. There's been a lot of improvements in this autopilot and the full self-driving. Well, I hate that term
silly.
It is because it's not. You can actually, you know, it actually does it. You know, until you can jump in and say, "Car, take me to the bar." You know.
Yeah.
It's not full self-driving.
Yeah, I agree. Tom, do you have the full self-driving package on your car?
No way. I'm not waiting for it until it's ready.
Yeah, I agree. Actually, my mom's car has it. While I was down here doing those tests, I was able, because I wasn't going to spend $6,000-$8,000 on my car for lane changes, which is really the only useful thing out of that package. But I was able to play around with it driving my mom's car. I put about 800,000 miles on it this week, just driving back and forth to Miami and around town. And it is really actually interesting. It will stop at red lights now. So I approach a red light and it comes to a stop. We actually broke that story on Out of Spec. That's a whole nother long story. But I got to try it for the first time in a production car and it's still beta, but not pre-release. And it's awesome. It just comes to a stop at the light. When it goes green, you confirm it and it goes forwards. The problem with autopilot is it's still, there's two different problems that I find with it. One, it lulls you into a sense of false security because it's so good 98% of the time that the one time that it messes up, you're not ready to take over potentially. And it also doesn't monitor driver behavior through a really good DMS driver monitoring system. And, a torque sensor in a steering wheel is not enough for me to communicate that I am looking forwards. All it says, I could be looking at the dogs behind me, touch the wheel and clear the message.
Right.
So with Super Cruise and now Copilot 360 from Ford, they will have eye tracking, which is the first iteration of really good DMS, and BMW uses this too. So Tesla is very far behind with autopilot being safe, I feel. But it is very feature rich. I just really hope normal people that take delivery of their car with contactless delivery understand the limitations of the system, because that's when it gets dangerous.
Exactly. And that is a problem, as we've seen. People don't understand the limits, or they, I don't blame the people as much as Tesla, because as you said, Kyle, the car is flawless 98 or 99% of the time, or 99.5, whatever it is, it works great. But it just takes that one time in 1,000 or 10,000 or whatever it is, and you're in some serious trouble. As I've mentioned here in the podcast before, I've had two, possibly three incidences where I'm certain my car, when I was on autopilot, would have driven me into like a concrete barrier if I didn't take over. And, it works great until it doesn't. And, it's driver assist features. It's not autopilot, it's not full self-driving. I've been pretty consistent with this, with Tesla, beating them up on this. I love it on mine. It works great until it doesn't. Use it, but you have to understand that it has its limitations, and there should be a better driver monitoring system, like Kyle mentions, rather than just, the torque sensor, where, people know they just hang a weight or something on the steering wheel and they pick up a damn book or start texting people. And, that's why we see these horrific crashes every now and then. Some of them are caught on video, where, a Tesla will just drive into the back of a parked truck or a concrete barrier.
It's very difficult for it to recognize
by the end of the year he didn't say by the end of the year this time. I think he just said very close I guess, Elon's very close might be, we're only 3 or 4 years away, but a lot of people look at very close like, oh, I better run out and buy it now, 'cause it's coming. And
or let me hit the software update button until it arrives on my car.
Yeah, just stand there. But it's not. We're not going to have level 5 autonomy for a few years.
I mean, technically, that means no steering wheel. So I think you should have said level 4, because that's, basically level 5 with controls.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just but with human controls.
Well, we're not going to have level four for a while. Then I'll
right. Well, they're doing a whole rewrite of the whole of all the software, all the code is getting a total rewrite. So that should help with some improvements. Yeah.
Yeah. So Tesla's way too bullish on this driving system, and there's nothing inherently wrong with the system. The system is great.
Right.
It is just how they communicate the use of the system to the people who drive the car.
Right. A lot of people argue it is better than what is offered by the Super Cruise from GM or the Ford system or even the BMW system. But you know, it all depends a lot. I mean, yeah, it is. Tesla owners, one of Tesla owners, you know, top favorite features. So, you know, it's not garbage, obviously, but you know, there's still issues.
I use it all the time.
Yeah.
As do I.
Right on. All right. So real quickly, while we're on the model, the Tesla, we saw a Model Y and a Ford Mustang Mach-E side by side for the first time this week. And that was kind of interesting to see, you know, because this is Ford's, you know, big, really their first big electric vehicle. And, you know, they really need to hit a home run with this because they don't have I don't think they have a really deep portfolio of vehicles coming yet. So this has to be a hit for them. And looking at them side by side, can you dig that up there, Martin? We can see them.
Let me bring that up. There's a better picture. There's a video. There's a better picture online that was the part of the original Twitter post. So let me show you that. And that's sure. A still is always you can actually stare at it for a little bit longer. But yeah, it's interesting seeing the two next to each other.
Yeah. And now we're looking at the back view. And I got to say, I prefer the Mach-E look from the back end.
Well, there's nothing wrong with the Tesla, but then when they put it next to the Mach-E, I was like, oh, that looks nice.
Right.
Like there's some angles that I still don't get the you know, the Mach-E. There's some shots that they issue that I don't think it looks terrible in. But then when you see real world photos of it, there's something about the studio shots that Ford use. It looks soft and bulbous. But then you see that and you go, that's so cool.
Right. One of my favorite things that Ford did was if you can see the side profile of the car, you can see it here. The paint droops down to make it look like it has a sloping rear roof line. But the actual roof is painted black and continues flat back. So it gives the sense of the kind of sporty SUV things that you guys like, but it retains the ability to haul the dogs. So it's a really nice compromise between the two. I think they did a good job. And I agree, Martin, I think it looks better in real world shots than whatever they're doing in the studio.
Yeah, I always have some problems with the front end of the Mach-E. I don't know if we have a shot of the front end there, just the, where the grill is, when they have the same color, body color and the big insert over the grill. I think the GT version doesn't have the body color there. I think it looks better.
Yeah, I think that's it, actually. It's that front end where it's there's shots of it that don't look right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, I'll try and find some pictures. So is that the one? Well, it's all the same color
there. Yeah, but it looks good there to me this time. But sometimes not so much, you know.
That's interesting.
Just if you're ordering one, don't order those wheels. Those wheels are not good.
Wheel opinions. Okay. All right. So let's move on a little bit. See the Toyota RAV4 Prime was in the headlines again this week, and we've seen some first driver reviews. And I don't know if you've had a chance to look at those, but I think that actually the big story with this is that we're seeing like massive markups from dealers for the RAV4 Prime, like $10,000.
Who would have known that a RAV4 would draw lines out the door? But this is such a huge problem. We spoke about it on the last show too. People want electrified vehicles. This is proof of it. So Toyota made a really solid, good plug-in hybrid electric vehicle. I'm going to get one to drive fairly soon. We're going to produce a lot of content for our viewers on it. It's going to be really great. I had to push all the cars back because of this trip. But we're going to go and we're going to have fun. It is the fastest accelerating Toyota other than the Supra. And so then Toyota just like they all this great stuff and they're like, sorry, we're not going to make any. And so then dealers are going to capitalize on that and jack up the prices.
Right. A lot of this is because supply is limited, right?
Exactly. They're not making enough.
Man, it seems like we can't get like one company to do everything right. You know, it's like either mediocre engineering or like in this case, no production. With engineering,
well, I think Polestar has got it actually.
Okay,
I can't find any fault in Polestar's thing so far.
Well, so I don't have this on the story list this week, but we did see the first. I think it's the first Polestar 2 actually first drive reviews.
Right,
and they were in England actually too, because the steering wheel's on the wrong side of the car, but
or the correct side.
I think you mean the right side of the car. I'll let you off that one.
But yeah, so the one video I saw that actually I looked at a couple of them, and we had that up on Inside EVs. If you just type in Polestar 2, you should be able to find that. And the one I saw, he does, you know, pretty much direct comparison to Model 3. And you know, it Model 3 kind of by the numbers, it doesn't really match the Model 3. It's like heavier, it's slower. But man,
but you don't drive cars on paper.
Right, that's true.
You drive them on pavement.
That's true.
And so I'm going to go and drive this in August, which is the earliest opportunity U.S. journalists have to drive it. And we're going to make a lot of videos and cool stuff. But after spending time with it in person, not moving, I think it's beautiful. I think the tech's really good with the Android Snappy system. I think it's got fair range, fair charging speeds. It all seems good to me, and you guys know I'm a Volvo fan, and this is part of that family, so right. I'm all about it.
And it's got a lift back on the back, so you have a little bit more, maybe more trunk space in the back than the Model 3?
It's like a mid-lift. It's not a full hatch, unfortunately. Okay. So it's something where we would not be able to fit our dogs into. So if we were to get one of this family of vehicle, which is a serious consideration at this point for Alyssa, it's going to have to be XC40 Recharge instead of the Polestar 2. But it's the same thing underneath, basically.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. They're on the same platform. And the XC40, I've seen that one. I haven't seen actually the Polestar 2 in person, but I have seen the XC40 Recharge. And, you know, that was nice. The materials and the interior, you know, it's like, yeah, I prefer it over the Tesla as far as like the material, the touch, just the feel.
Place to spend time.
I do like that Spartan design that Tesla uses, but I think the materials could use a bit of an upgrade here and there. You know, it wouldn't take a whole lot to really improve that experience, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nice inside, and it's well engineered. The cars they gave to the press over here this week were press were invited to a private test track. So they were able to get some performance out of it, but they were only showing off the Polestar 2 with the 5,000 pound performance pack added, which gives you the O-lines, dampers, the Brembo brakes, everything is like the seat belts are the same color as the brake calipers.
Gold seat belts. That is the best thing ever.
Yes, it's very cool. So they were driving the performance one, which adds five grand. But again, it splits over here. I mentioned earlier, it does split the Model 3.
Right, so it's more expensive than Model 3, but it's cheaper than the performance Model 3, but it's not as fast.
Cheaper, but significantly by like $6,000 or $7,000 cheaper than the Model 3 performance.
Right.
And it's only a little more expensive because we get £3,000 off of cars as a government grant.
Right.
And then by the time and Tesla published their prices online with it already taken off, and Polestar don't. And so don't get me started on consumer education and awareness of EVs. Everyone's doing it differently. But actually, if you take that off of the headline price of Polestar, you're not far off a Model 3 dual motor long range. So, and then the performance is the same. You get more mileage out of a Tesla by about 50 miles, but 0-60 is basically the same.
Oh, really? For the long range?
Yeah, which is 4.4, I think, in the UK. And I think the Polestar 2 is 4.7, I think. Mm.
Okay, yeah. So it's basically the same.
It's just at that point, it's preference. Obviously, Tesla will sell 10 Model 3s for every Polestar 2. Yeah. But it's, you know, if you have a Tesla in the garage already, or you don't really need to rely on the supercharge network because, as I understand it, Martin, your charging infrastructure is even worse than ours away from the Tesla experience. Yeah. And, you know, at that point, if you're comfortable with that or you just want to drive around town, the Polestar is going to set you apart from everyone else.
It's true. And it's a great looking vehicle too. I prefer the looks of it over the Model 3 as well.
And you can't discount how much the supercharging network adds value to the vehicles though, because especially first-time EV buyers, you know, they're so concerned about range anxiety and about being stranded, much more so than what they really need to be. But hey, we're human and that's, you know, we have fears. We fear the unknown, and this is unknown to most people. You know, having that supercharger network, you know, I don't know if it's as robust in the UK, Martin, as it is here, but we can, you know, Kyle and I can drive anywhere and just it's not an issue. You don't even have to think about it. We can drive wherever we want to go, and there's always superchargers. And it's just not the case with any other vehicle. I mean, you know, take, for instance, I was talking about the i3 that I, you know, had the charging problem with on the Electrify America. With, you know, where it just shut off and it didn't charge. That just doesn't happen with Tesla. You just pull in, plug in, and it charges the darn car. And in 15, 20 minutes, you're out of there. And, you know, I think
it's amazing integration.
I think sometimes we don't, being so into electric vehicles and EVs and charging, I think we might not be able to look at it from the perspective of a first-time buyer that's super concerned about being able to charge the thing. And Tesla has such an advantage, and that's absolutely part of the reason why they sell so many more cars than any other electric vehicle manufacturer.
You're 100% correct.
We're fine for superchargers over here, and actually, I watch from a distance at the regular articles about holiday season or Thanksgiving queues at superchargers, maybe on the West Coast. I've never seen a queue at any supercharger in the UK, because they always build them in blocks of 8, 10 or 12, and there's not as many cars over here. So I've never seen a queue. If I see them sharing a stall, I look at them and go, oh, man, only half the power. I rarely see them sharing. So and that is, you know, that I was talking to a friend earlier today who's be careful what I say, but who's doing some interesting things in energy. And the conversation, and as you know, Tesla entering the UK energy market, of which he knows a fair bit about, and the conversation was around that walled garden. And actually, can you imagine when Tesla will sell you the car, will look after your charging, and will supply you your home energy supply as well, so that it's all just seamless? There's just one bill. That's going to be, you know, got a battery pack. The first Tesla mega pack is now in the UK, which is exciting. So they're now storing energy and selling it back to the grid using mega packs for the first time.
Nice.
And if they can do something funky with that 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. expensive bit of the day, they're going to be absolutely quids in when it comes to. But as you say, it's that ecosystem or walled garden. Once you're inside it, I don't know anybody who's owned a Tesla who sold one and gone back to a different brand. There must be someone somewhere.
Yeah, there's some. There's a few.
But I don't know personally anyone. I talk to a lot of EV drivers. Anyone who's owned a Tesla, they might change with another Tesla, but no one's ever gone back to gas, and no one's ever gone to a different brand of EV. And it's just because it just works. It's like paying more to get an Apple iPhone. Works.
It was a nice map. You had the Tesla map of the supercharger network through
that's over here.
The UK and there's still lots coming already.
Oh, and there's tons on the way. There's not many in this country, there's only one V3. But just if you're doing European trips, rather than having a wallet full of RFID cards and apps and all that kind of stuff, if I'm going to do 1,000 miles down to Italy or Spain, go find some sunshine. It just works, and it's the unique thing.
Yeah, very nice. So speaking of long range and things, we'll sort of wrap up pretty soon here, but I wanted to hit these. A pile of high-end plug-in hybrids released some range figures this week. So I thought we'd run through them real quick. Probably the most interesting one here, well, maybe not most interesting, but most available here is the Lincoln Aviator FEV. It's been rated at 21 miles of EPA electric range, which is not great, but it's a stonking big SUV. And so, you know, that's something that's Ford's moving, or Lincoln is, you know, moving towards electrification. And it's a, you know, it's a nice looking vehicle. So it's nice that, you know, people in this segment in the market for this kind of vehicle can now get a plug. And, you know, for a lot of people, 20 miles, yeah, that should, it'll cover, I guess the average is like more closer to 30 miles a day, the average person drives. So,
well, you can charge at work too, midday. Yeah. So you go from home, plug into a wall outlet in your parking garage and come back. But I think the big thing that Lincoln's doing, which is similar to Geely's approach or like Volvo, for example, with plug-in hybrids, is their top trim, the fastest one, is the plug-in hybrid version.
It's good.
It has like 600 foot-pounds of torque and 400 and something horsepower. Like, this is not a slow car. So right. I think that I recently had a plug-in hybrid on test that had this approach. It was the V60 Polestar. And it was great because I could cruise around in electric if I wanted to. But anytime you put your foot down, I mean, that they just rock it off because you get the full turbocharged engine plus the electric boost. And it really makes it fun to drive around the city.
Yeah, on the Inside EVs article, I saw the output numbers, so like, were crazy high. I forget what they were right off the top of my head, but, you know, all kinds of power. But I'm not really familiar with the gas version, so I didn't know how it compared. But I guess it's the fastest, it's the best.
And yep, when it comes to plug-in hybrids, but.
Oh, there
this,
we go.
This is the new standard. Come on,
right? Let's get there. It's got to have, 60 miles is the new standard. I agree.
Yeah. Now, look, Mercedes do this already with the GLD 350 diesel, you know, nasty. But in this, there'll be a petrol engine in this. And this is the new, we've got to get there as quick as possible. If you're going to make plug-in hybrids, make them with 100 Ks of range, 62 miles, and, you know, you're off to the races then.
So for those of you not watching the video right now, we're looking at the Mercedes-Benz new S-Class plug-in hybrid in camouflage. And it's said to have 62 miles of all-electric range, or 100 kilometers of all-electric range, which is fabulous. I mean, when
Tom and I get to test this, we will have a nice week of luxurious comfort driving with massaging seats.
You'll be so chilled on that Friday show. You'll be so chilled out. You guys are going to be like, yeah, fine.
You have this lined up already, or is this?
No, but we'll get one to test, I'm sure, at some point.
Okay.
And that's the next generation. I don't think we're going to get this one anytime soon.
Right.
And it's interesting. If you recall, we talked about this a couple weeks ago when I had the X3 plug-in hybrid. BMW also announced that the next generation of all of their plug-in hybrids is going to have a minimum of the 100 kilometers, you know, 62 miles of plug-in electric range. So now Mercedes comes out with their first like next generation, and it's exactly what BMW said. So with any luck, that's going to be the new standard. And, you know, the next generation plug-in hybrids are going to be, you know, have really good electric range. Because as you can see now, all the ones that are not all, but the vast majority, especially from the German manufacturers, all have right around 20 miles of EPA rated range.
Right.
Which, you know, it works for a lot of people right now that wouldn't necessarily be in a plug-in hybrid. I mean, in an electric vehicle, it works. I liked my time with the X3 plug-in hybrid. You know, I averaged, I think, somewhere close to 60 miles per gallon. But for the next generation, when we're talking 2022, 2023,
right,
the vehicles, I mean, if you have a plug-in hybrid, it's got to have 100 kilometers of electric range, in my opinion. It's just, there's no excuse not to at that point.
This is basically triple what they're offering now. We have the 2020 Mercedes-Benz GLC 350E is rated at 22 miles of EPA electric range. The 2020 Mercedes-Benz S560E, 18 miles of all electric range. The Range Rover gets plug-in hybrid gets 19 miles. So yeah, 60 miles is like a breakthrough. It's better than the Clarity plug-in hybrid, and it's better than the Volt. Do you get like a 60-mile plug-in hybrid, or do you get like a 300, 400-mile all-electric?
Yeah, no comparison.
What about the, so Mercedes will have the, do you know when the, so Mercedes is a all electric sedan, is the EQS, and it's a very streamlined, nice looking sedan. And is it going to come out around the same, is that 2022? Or is that a little bit later?
I believe it's 2022. I actually am one of the few people that drove their concept.
That's right.
Which was a pretty interesting experience. It was like a one-off. So nothing like, I wasn't even allowed to close the door when I got in it to drive it, you know, and it had that funky steering wheel that was like a video game, you know, like one quarter steering wheel, which they look really cool, but you cannot drive a vehicle with that. Like turning around, I was like, my hand was getting stuck in it and everything. And I couldn't even make a turn, but I'm really looking forward to that vehicle. I think it's going to be, that's Mercedes is like BMW i4, you know, I mean, that's going to be their first look at what we can do, you know, hopefully it won't disappoint.
Yeah, well, they already have the EQC crossover, which is, I think they had a shareholder, I think they have like a 0.5%, own 0.5% of Daimler, was complaining about the EQC being boring and whatever. But, you know, I think it's okay for a first effort, you know, it's not selling like, but it should be interesting, I think, to see how this, the tension between all electric and plug-in hybrids goes over time. I believe plug-in hybrids have been doing pretty good, as all plug-ins have been doing in Europe this year. And so they have more life, I think, plug-in hybrids have than people have expected. But it should be interesting to see as all electrics improve and as charging infrastructure improves. I just want to say that also Lucid Motors is opening up 20 sales and service locations around the country by the end of next year. So that's something to look forward to. And we'll see more about the Lucid Air coming up this year. It's a pretty exciting vehicle, a sedan, as we mentioned before.
Very nice stores, by the way, just not to keep us going, but in these pictures, they're beautiful.
Yeah, check out those images on Inside EVs. And real quick before we go, there's a new scooter racing series coming. So if you haven't, that sounds a little bit crazy, nothing to get excited about until you see the video. They produce this like computer generated image video, but it looks, you know, like Tron, like sort of, you know, it's a stand up scooters like you can rent, but 60 mile an hour stand up scooters with a yeah, like those Tron visuals, like day glow and matching outfits. I like the matching outfits part in the helmet. It kind of looks all futuristic and fun. And it's got some big names behind it. Lucas Degrassi, who races in Formula E, he's involved with that, as well as Alexander Wurz, who is a Formula One driver. Yeah, and so that's something to look forward to. There'll be more coming up about that over the next year, if it happens. Racing series are kind of notorious for, you know, big plans and then kind of falling through at the end. We've seen like a number of different racing series not really pan out. But anyway, that brings us to the end of our show. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us. If you have any comments about any of the topics on today's show, you can comment on the Inside EVs podcast post, the YouTube comment section, of course, or on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread. And don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Tom is at Tomalog. Martin is at EV News Daily. Kyle is at Out of Spec. And I'm at Dominic_Y. So click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. And we'll see you all next week. Have a wonderful week.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.